Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on the part of the world that you're calling in from. My name is Amit Dungrani, and I'm really excited to be your host for this week's Global Awaken Call. Today, we have a very special guest speaker. Her name is Maria Jane. Maria is a seeker, a traveler, writer, entrepreneur, advocate. Most aptly for this call, she is a storyteller. She is a global citizen, having lived, worked, and traveled in various parts of the world, including the U.S., Liberia, Finland, where she currently lives, and what she calls her second home, India. However, Maria would say her biggest journey has been the one that she has taken within herself, cultivating in silence, practicing in everyday life here and now. And it's with this beautiful mindset and spirit that's led her to meet so many incredible people and had a number of life-altering experiences, including one of the most transformative ones with the unlikeliest of individuals, an individual on death row. Now, I'm not going to play the role of spoiler here, but I'm sure many of you were compelled to hear this call with Maria's exploration of the Prison Pen Pal initiative that led to her most recent art exhibition called Buddhas on Death Row. And I know all of us are very excited to hear us. Here's how today's call is going to work. In a few minutes, I'm going to turn things over to our wonderful moderator, Pavi, who will briefly share some of her own thoughts, give us a more formal introduction of Maria, and then engage in a deep dialogue with her. And so, Pavi, I just thought maybe we could start off by you sharing a few thoughts of your own and then introduce us to Maria and take us away for today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Amit. And thank you, Maria, for being here. I was introduced to Maria on Christmas Eve 2013. I first wrote to her on Christmas Eve 2013. Our mutual friend Rajesh had introduced her by way of Painter of the Desert, an article that she had written about Chip Thomas, a doctor in Navajo Nation with the heart of a street artist who has served that community in stunning ways over the past three decades. And I was so impressed by the piece that I reached out for permission to syndicate the story on Daily Good. And Maria's response arrived on Christmas Day. And every interaction with her since has always felt a little bit like Christmas. There are some people in our world and in our lives who have a gift for carrying contradictions with grace. People who can hold suffering and joy with both hands and not drop either. People who convey a brand of bubbling enthusiasm along with a sense of inner stillness. People who carry the charming innocence of a beginner's mind alongside old soul wisdom and fragilities alongside tremendous strength. People who travel the globe and somehow manage to show up everywhere with the spirit of a local. Maria is one of those paradoxical people, and it's impossible to meet her and not be struck by the bright spark of her being. I was introduced to Maria by email 3 years ago, and we crossed paths in person for the first time 2 days ago. But I feel like the first time I truly met her was this May over Skype, when a young Finnish woman with a face aglow with bright red glasses and a deep love for this intricate web of being called life first talked about a man named Moyo, his difficult story, and the lotus of a remarkable friendship that was just beginning to bloom out of the mud that is death row. Listening to her speak, not the words necessarily, but the energy behind them, made me lean forward and pay attention. Maria, as we heard, has played many significant roles in her life across a diverse area of fields. As an international development worker with the United Nations focused on improving the lives of women and ending gender-based violence, as a social entrepreneur with her partner Mayank, founding an online store where India's ancient craft traditions meet the global market. As a writer, traveling the world for stories that open heart and mind, she's lived all over the world along with her homeland, Finland. But really, her homeland is and always has been in her heart. And Maria's ultimate role, I believe, will always be that of being a noble friend. Buddhas on Death Row may have started out as a project between a man on death row in the United States and a free woman in Helsinki. But over these past months, it's turned into a jeweled practice of living in the home of one's heart and learning what it means to build bridges of friendship from the inside out. In the last 3.5 months, I've witnessed Maria and Moyo pouring a phenomenal degree of intention, time, energy, and soulfulness into an effort that in the vast expanse of this world may only be a grain of sand of goodness. But that little grain, too, is a channel, and it has glinted with the same forces that run the universe, and it has moved the lives of thousands in quiet ways, mine included. My heart is delighted by this opportunity to have Maria on our call and to have her share her spirit and stories today. Thank you for being with us, Maria, and thank you for being.
Oh, thank you. I must say that I have this huge smile on my face and very, very moist eye corners right now. And yeah, I just feel like saying, making it visible also to all of you who have joined us. It's tremendous to be in this conversation together. And where I sit right now, I'm surrounded by letters from Moyo and letters that he has prepared for this call, as we have prepared together for this call. His artwork is here with me, a beautiful, beautiful painting entitled Consciousness Unconfined, and I think that really sets the spirit for this coming together, for us all to unconfine our consciousness a little more. So it's truly a gift, and I think we are also making maybe an awakening call record in terms of sign-ups from Finland. So I just want to send warm greetings to home as well. Lämpimät terveiset Suomeen.
So beautiful. Well, let's plunge right in because there's lots of ground to cover. And thank you for presencing Moyo. He's definitely very much a part of this call. I'm so glad you have his letters and artwork with you to draw on. I think it would be really wonderful to begin at the beginning of this journey and how it is that a woman in Helsinki came across a friend in death row in the United States, and mm-hmm. what began this journey for you.
Yes, this is a question that it's been wonderful to return to the beginning of this whole thing through this question that comes from so many people. It was in the spring of 2014. I was sitting at home. I was surfing the internet. I had actually watched a documentary regarding the civil rights movement. And after that, just one link kind of led to another, and suddenly I find myself on this website called Write a Prisoner. I had never known that something like that exists, but there's an organization, it's an American organization that is dedicated, whose mission is to connect people in prison with pen friends on the outside. And really it was that mission that when I explored it, the thought of creating positive, meaningful connections that resonated me. And on that site, I then, one of the first ads that I came across was that of Moyo's, and I just decided to write to him because that ad also just deeply resonated. Some of the common denominators were the practice of meditation, practice of yoga, which were something that I had relatively recently started practicing in my own life, as well as a keen interest in art and using our creative force. So from there it started, and I wrote my first letter to Moyo in May 2014, and he accepted my letter and wrote back. And since then, you know, small letters, postcards, very, very thick envelopes containing, you know, 15 pages of writing. They have just been traveling across the Atlantic.
Can you describe that first exchange? Like, when did you... So obviously there was something on the website and in Moyo's profile and in what he had shared that resonated. And then when you wrote that first letter and received the first letter, what was your experience of that? Can you talk a little bit about that first letter?
The first letter that I wrote it outside. I was walking with my dog, and we went to the park, and I sat there on this cliff, and I just started writing from there, just describing how it was to be there. I remember that I started wondering aloud, you know, on that paper about that rock, and, you know, the ages that the rock has been there, witnessing seasons come and go, people come and go, and how kind of that long count of time for that rock is what the shorter count of time for us human beings is. I was kind of thinking a little bit about that. Describing something about Finland, sharing something about myself. I remember saying, what should I tell about myself? Should I talk about my likes or dislikes? And later also on my own journey, I've learned that, yeah, we shouldn't be too attached to our own likes and dislikes. but that's kind of where it started. And when Moyo wrote back, there was just this... you know, this curiosity, and we are the same age. So he has shared how he always pays attention kind of to people's age, whenever if it's a pen friend or if it's a magazine or a book that he's reading, to just kind of connecting with people who are same age and wondering on the different life journeys and trajectories that we've all had.
And from there, like, the frequency you would write every month, or was it just more ad hoc?
The frequency of letters, writing, yeah. It was even on a weekly basis, sometimes even on a daily basis, and especially now, since we started working on Buddhas on Death Row, that was actually exactly a year ago, when the idea for this project, which actually, of course, turned out to be a practice, when that emerged. So it's been quite intense. I've been writing on a daily basis, and it's been intense. And amidst all this, I just feel I need to say it's been amazing to be supported, for example, by a life partner who's been taking care of, you know, preparing food and stuff when sometimes I've just even forgotten to eat. It's been that intense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, just to give our listeners an idea, because I think we live in an age where communication is, we take it, the speed of it for granted, the fact that, you know, we can reach out and touch someone with a phone call, with an email, and have it be instant.
Mm-hmm.
The speed of your communication with Moyo has been very different, and so, you know, I've always been fascinated by this. When I first learned that the starlight that we see is not present light, it's the light that reaches us is old light, and that just, it blows my mind even now to think about it. In a sense, like, the letter writing has that. The voice that reaches you is a voice from the past. almost. Mm. There's this asynchronous quality to the communication. And that's for a different, not that we, you know, the restrictions and the fact that Moyo doesn't have access to email or to phone calls or anything is, of course, you know, that feels like there's something to be examined there in terms of whether that kind of restriction is helpful or not. But beyond that, like just get with the constraints that you had, what did that form of communication, can you talk a little bit about that? Like the letter writing mode.
Yes. That's been something very important. That's been something that I have learned a lot about when I think about the modern communications that we have, you know, shooting messages around very quickly, responding quickly. Sometimes it's akin to, you know, just being very reactive. Messages coming to you all the time. It's also distraction. Whereas I've been able to see kind of and find in letter writing this quality of really pausing, being present, and listening. And really, for me, when I write a letter, I really want to be fully present, you know, to reserve and commit and invest that time when I'm, you know, moving my thoughts through the movement of my hand, you know, and through the pen it flows onto the paper. So really that kind of listening and weighing your words. And sometimes I've been kind of balancing also when I'm writing to Moyo. And when I'm writing to Moyo, I've learned a lot about this, that, you know, one aspect that I've been practicing is just kind of stream of consciousness writing, just editing myself less, because sometimes it's like, oh, can I say that? How can I say that? And it's like, okay, well, I just want to be present and be authentic and put away that doubtful mm-hmm. kind of tone in my head. So do that kind of writing. But then there, of course, have been times when I really wanted to also weigh my words. And, you know, it's taking a while to write a letter, a lot of smudges, you know, a lot of words crossed out, a lot of words really crossed out so so carefully that he for sure cannot read what's behind, you know, that mess on the paper. And at the same time, you know, preserving that authenticity and having the letter be the authentic presence, you know, showing also the thought process. If I've smudged out words, you know, he can see that, mm-hmm. okay, here the thought process has not been very easy.
Uh-huh.
So these are some of the thoughts that come to me. But another thing, what you mentioned, you know, about the light coming from the stars being a very old light, and this, you have to help me. I don't know how to pronounce that. Asynchronicity?
The asynchronicity? Perfect.
So when the Buddhas on Death Row exhibition was on in Helsinki, and when we were preparing for that and everything kind of around that, there have been some amazing synchronicities. And I want to share with all of you one of these events. I was invited to a radio show in Helsinki, on Radio Helsinki, this beautiful one-hour conversation. And for that program, the host invited me to request 4 songs that she would play. And that was a really delightful task to select those 4 songs. And the last song I selected was Breathing Light by Nitin Sawhney. It's a song that I felt for a long time that I would want to request that for Moyo, for him to hear. And in introducing that song in the end of the conversation, I said something like, this song is important to me because, you know, the title is Breathing Light. And sometimes in life there are moments when it's enough that you just breathe and be present with your breath. That there are times in life when that's all you can do and that's enough. And then when I went home that evening, there was a letter waiting for me from Moyo. There was a longer letter in that envelope and then a smaller note that he had written on his typewriter, this old school typewriter, on a piece of map. And in the end of that note, he said, "Sometimes the only thing you can do in here in this cell is to lie down with a book or just, you know, to lie down and just breathe and be. Sometimes breathing is the only thing you can do here." And when I read those words, I felt like the university just condensed. I was like, how can you say these words in a piece of a note that you have written at least a week ago? I mean, 10 days ago, you sent them to me. They arrived exactly on that same day when I said those same words in a radio here, you know, across the world. So sometimes it's old light, sometimes it's new light, sometimes it's just light.
Very true, very true. And I think that for me, that's been really striking to see the kind of tuning in that has happened at all stages of this journey, where there's the planning, there's the logistics of running an exhibition, of organizing the art, and the, you know, all the myriad details attached to that. But so there's a mind, you know, there's kind of a mindset that you're using, but there's also the heart set. I think that I've been really struck by is to continuously be coming back to, like, what is unfolding here, you know, to listening to kind of that inner heartbeat underneath the busy thrum of the activity, and that listening that both of you have had, and then everyone who's come to the project, I feel like also brought that quality here, has allowed for a kind of unfolding that almost feels like it is not, it's not just you and Moyo. It seems like there's something much bigger that you're connected to that is coming through this work. And before we jump into the exhibition itself, I think let's backtrack again. And when was the moment where you realized that Buddhas on Death Row was something that you had to do? When was the seed of that idea? When did the seed of that idea start for you?
Yes. That seed emerged in October last year, and it came in the form of a very special letter that I received from Moyo. And I would actually like to read that letter to all of you, if you permit. So here comes in Moyo and really his intention that has been put in motion in all this that we've been doing. This letter, I just want to describe it to you. It's written on a, it's typewritten on a brown paper, which is from a paper bag in which Moyo gets his meals on death row. And he uses whatever he can, you know, as materials for his art, as also as you know, paper for his letters, and just that creative force present in these letters and his artwork, you know, that creative force and resilience is something. We'll get back to that later, but I now start reading the letter. And the state says, "We will collect your life sometime after 6 p.m. on the specified date. This is a tragedy which we are playing out, this coming to death row as ignorant boys and becoming men of conscience, redeeming ourselves, falling in love with life and dreaming constantly of the ways which we could and would love to more than anything make amends for our sad misdeeds. And even beyond all that, doing all we can to give something good to the world. We experience a profound transformation sparked by our legal condemnation to death. And throughout the decade plus of our time here, like Tupac's famous poem, the rose that grew from concrete. We come into our own bloom within the concrete and steel isolation of our solitary inhabited cells, feeding this transformation with desolation. Yet the system which was instrumental in sparking this beautiful metamorphosis remains stagnant, putrid, toxic, festering, and predatory. And one day, despite all the transforming one undergoes for the sake of it being the natural way, one is handed a warrant for one's very life. Yet all we see is a system which sees clear through who we are today, all the way through to the day we committed our sad act. And it says, we do not see you today, and in fact, we reject that it is even in your nature to transform. This can only be a sham. You are a criminal. You must die. We will kill you. Somehow you feel you are missing something, and it's beyond your comprehension that a system so powerful doesn't have the resources to be made aware that people do change. But who do we tell this to? There's no one to listen, no one to care, and despite it all, you will die. In another way, I see this as just a huge illusion of mankind, a stupid game we are playing, and though it has its repercussions, in the eternal view, it's not much, doesn't mean a thing. In so many ways, or for so many reasons, I feel doomed. However, for me, part of the means of overcoming a senseless death is through living with purpose, fully, while we live. It's why I'm devoted to continuing my transformation, making art, the writing and rehabilitation course, working towards positive change in here and outside the prison. It's a way of doing something that matters while we can, until something that doesn't matter stops us. Moyo. So it was this letter that I read and a piece of artwork, beautiful portrait entitled Yogini that Moyo sent me as a gift that brought the seed in my mind. I was actually at home meditating one day when this vision just came to me that I need to organize an art exhibition. And I shared that vision with Moyo in a letter, and he agreed when I asked him, what do you think? Should we do this? He agreed, and we started. I had no idea. I had never organized an art exhibition. I didn't know how to do it, when, where, how would everything fall in place. But, yeah, you know, on the journey, the right people just appeared on the path and joined hands with us, and it all came together.
I want to go into that process because I think there's a lot of richness there. Before that, though, on paper, on what you can find online, you know, for a lot of the world, Moyo is defined by his crime, a crime committed at the age of 18 that ended two lives, sentenced to death row, and where he's been in solitary confinement for the last 15 years. And that's, you know, that's about it. That's where his story kind of begins and ends for many, in terms of the way the system might see him. For you, who is Moyo?
For me, Moyo is a friend. He's also a teacher. For someone who I can't even fathom the mindset, you know, that he has been in a mindset from which such horrendous acts emerge that he has committed, and the journey that he has then committed himself to in terms of owning his actions and deciding that you know, he's going to improve himself. He wants to improve himself. He says he's seeking better ways of being and thinking, and that we all have something worthwhile for another. We just have to find it. And the way, you know, he has been finding this, whatever, what it is in him that is worthwhile. So, you know, as he's a friend with whom I can share my own seeking of light, my own ugliness, my own darkness as well, ponder on all of those things. Once he was telling me, we were talking about in letters about, you know, these difficult things in our life. I was kind of alluding to some difficult things in my own life. I wasn't really naming them. And he wrote back saying, you know, sometimes I just see it as, you know, I just sit down at a table and I invite all these dark things of mine, you know, to come to the same table that's bathing in sunlight, you know, to bring those things to the light. What does that mean? They can start dissolving. They can actually be illuminated. Hmm. So who is Moyo to me? He's a friend. He's a teacher. He's a fellow traveler. He's someone who encourages me deeply to continue my own journey, my own growth, my own practice, as well as to really tap into, you know, the power of kindness and compassion within.
I think even the letter you shared, and every letter that you've shared over this journey on the website, with the people who've been helping coordinate, his clarity in expression and the journey he's taken to be able to articulate the way he has. I mean, I think I remember one of the letters you shared where he talks about realizing when he's in death row as you know, barely out of his teens, recognizing that he doesn't have ownership of his narrative, that it's been told by someone else, and reclaiming his narrative becomes a kind of a driving force and an exploration that leads him in so many directions, to meditation, to yoga, to African American history, to art, to dabbling in, you know, with colors and paper and paint with the limited resources in prison. And in one of those letters, it's movingly typewritten on a page of an atlas. One of the lines, and you have this on Buddhas on Death Row, where he said, "I was always fascinated with art and how others were able to take pictures, but my idea of art before and well into my incarceration was limited to picture making for the sake of making pictures that were appealing. I never imagined that art can be used as a bridge between two points on the map of life or between two people." And I think for me, like reading that, it just, like the essence of what this project is, it's building bridges, it's joining people together, hearts across the world. It is joining life experiences. It is, you know, it's really holding up that mirror and allowing each person who comes across Moyo to come to him as a friend, to learn from him and to be able to offer something back to him. I think that's the potential with which you've created this this platform. And looking at the website now, anyone who's been to Buddhas on Death Row, the website, it just looks so immaculate. It looks like such a work, a perfect work in many ways. And yet, it wasn't necessarily an easy process. And I know you've talked about that in the past, and I wonder if you could share a little bit about what came up in the process of this beautiful collaboration. You know, what was the mud that you had to work through? For this lotus to emerge.
I would like to go back to what you spoke about, you know, building these bridges and building these connections. And I feel I should share another another letter right now, which is an important bridge, an important, because Moya talks about, you know, sharing light, and that's what we should all be doing with each other. And well, I'm just going to start reading this important letter. Once, over 10 years ago, the daughter of a victim of my crime wrote to me after seeing a website. She expressed so much pain that she was feeling because of the actions of mine. And this pain was something that sent me into a depression that lasted weeks. It was then that I began to wake up to the pain that I had created in the lives of others. Here's the most interesting thing to me about this letter from her. She expressed her overwhelming pain from her loss. The fact that her son would never meet his grandpa, being he was still in his mother's womb when I shot his grandpa. And despite all of this pain that she was carrying, she somehow found compassion to encourage me to do something with my life. I'm serious, she did. It was strange because I had heard all these stories from guys here who had been contacted by people who were the friends and relatives of the people that they hurt. And it seemed that often these letters come with the wish that the condemned man kill himself and get it over with, or how the victim's family members will be celebrating the night the condemned is killed by the state, how they can't wait to watch him take his final breath. But her letter held none of this. I didn't get the sense that she was writing this to wish me all the ill in the world. I didn't get the sense that she was writing this to wish me all the ill the world can hold, although she was obviously feeling that she was holding all the pain the world can hold. She encouraged me to do something with my life, to get off all the stupid bullshit and do something with my life. I recall telling myself then that I will, and I have tried. But I think that it was that compassion that played such an important role in the course of my life. I'm really grateful for it.
Beautiful.
I learned yesterday that the Navajo people, they call someone who has committed a crime a person who acts as if they have no relatives. So with that thought, I just come back to the, you know, the idea of building bridges and really the need to connect with ourselves and to reconnect with ourselves when we have forgotten, you know, to remember our song and to sing it to each other and to keep on singing it to ourselves.
I think there's letters like that one, you know, that Moya sent describing this electrifying letter from the daughter of the victim, where the purpose is so clear, and he, it almost enters him like a force, and then continues to live in him. And I think that, you know, when you started this idea during the exhibition, and we'll have this collaboration, you were going into uncharted territory.
Yes.
And the process, there's the adventure part of going into uncharted territory. There's the excitement. There's the explorative piece of that, and there's also the fear that can come up with that, the anxiousness, the maybe this was a bad idea, you know, kind of thoughts that can come in. And how did the trust emerge as you went? And this is not someone you could just call up anytime and say, oh, let's talk through this. You know, you had to work through it in this, I mean, in this connected kind of isolation, which is, or solitude, which is intriguing. And I'd love to hear you share a little bit more about what that process of the collaboration was like and how you both worked through the challenges of it.
Yeah, it's been a great practice of facing fear. You know, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the ability to, you know, move forward in the presence of fear, and that's something I've really had a direct experience of as we have been co-creating Buddhas on Death Row. I've had all kinds of fears, and Moyo has also shared with me about the fears that he has had, and really this has been the opportunity to make a conscious decision to be unafraid, and a huge, you know, to be unafraid, it has been enabled by building trust. At some point, I just decided to trust. I just decided to be unafraid. All kinds of fears were coming from the outside, you know, doubts. There was a person who was warning me, telling me to be cautious, you know, consider, don't write this, don't do that. And I felt kind of this fear and doubt starting to accumulate as if they were, you know, like these fear birds that hover around and start, you know, picking up twigs and building these fear bird nests. And I just realized that if I want to act from my purest intention, if I want to act from my heart, I cannot have these fear bird nests building up here. And I told this person that you have to stop. I'm choosing to be unafraid, and you know, I can't have these fear narratives coming at me, because I need to be able to move forward. There's very little time. You know, when you work on an exhibition with someone whom you can reach through letters only, who can only reach you through letters, and it takes up to 2 weeks to get those letters from, you know, between one another. At some point, you know, we were really counting down the time. You know, are we able to get this information, these key pieces for the exhibition together from Moyo? In mail, and with this, just another blessing on this journey, actually, I met after 2 decades a person who used to be my best friend back in school days, and we hadn't met for 20 years, and bam, we just happened to meet, and she just happens to be this art professional today in Helsinki, and she said that she would love to help. And when she came on board, the road just started to opening. But coming back to this trust, so with her also, we just decided that, you know, we are just going to trust everything is going to arrive on time, and so it did. I have so many thoughts right now in my head about this fear, overcoming the fear. But I think I would actually just like to share what Moyo has said about building trust and working with fear. I want to read from one of his letters, preparatory awaken call letters. Here on Death Row, we only have contact with the outside via letters and visits. And so it is difficult to try and control what is happening outside the prison when it comes to you in here attempting to build anything like what we are doing. You have to trust in the people you're working with. Sadly, most of us come from cutthroat backgrounds, are cutthroats or have been. We live daily in a harsh place where trust is so very rare. And you know from hard experience that you aren't always paranoid, not always. And it's complicated. Nothing is clear cut. Nothing is stone. All you know is that you have to be careful. And then there was that time when that pen pal of such and such took off and kept his art. You have to watch people. We hear all day and every day. If you slashed these prison walls with a blade, they would bleed fear, illogical fear, paranoia. And he says that there was a time also when he heard this voice in his head. Moya heard this voice in his head saying that he's also had that, you know, gotta watch this chick voice popping in terms of, you know, whether he can trust me or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all this that he shared now about his fears and overcoming, you know, building that trust, he says, this level of honesty was not possible with me this time last year. It was there, but I was too afraid to access it. I would not have revealed this to you last year. We are both living our respective lives where we are constantly engaging with others and working on ourselves. So we are also bringing that light to our meetings, our friendship, and it enriches us. And he says that, you know, this experience of putting the exhibition together, for him it's been an opportunity to practice at letting go of control, you know, when you work in a group setting, when you work with many people together. He says, I can work on listening to others more and seeing that their ideas are as valid as my own. And he feels that he's, you know, all of this has really strengthened him to work, to keep on working on the real nature project, which is the down-to-earth, ordinary, the everyday project. So he has so many times really shared how he has learned to put himself aside and to let go of control and to trust. And, you know, this expansion that we've experienced, it's been truly remarkable.
It's been remarkable, and I feel like it's touched on so many things that are universal, even though it's a very particular collaboration between, you know, a particular person going through an experience on death row and you on the other end in Helsinki. There's the uniqueness of your individual stories, and there's also the universal truth of what it means to be human, to try and build a friendship, to try and build trust, to try and face down your fears, to try and be your authentic self. The lessons that you've learned and taught each other along the way, I think, have bearing on all of our lives. And, you know, when you're talking about your fears, it, you know, there's a real element to that. Part of your fear, as I recall, was just you didn't want anything you did to get Moyo into trouble. And it's kind of a paradoxical thought to think about getting someone on death row in trouble. You would think that, you know, that's in about as much trouble as you can be, but that there are little things that the guards can do, that, you know, the little privileges that he has access to can be snatched away, that, you know, a miserable living condition can be made that much harder, was a real fear for you. And you're working in the outside world where things move fast. He's situated in a context where nothing seems to move at all. And just how those two worlds would, you know, would kind of come together through this collaboration. There was a friction and a tension there that could have imploded on itself had it not been for the fineness of spirit that I think you both have. And I think it really came to light very sharply in the decision to use Moyo's pen name. And maybe you could share how that came about.
Yes, so Moyo has wanted to be and has chosen to be present in Buddhas on Death Row with his artist name. It's a name that he has adopted in prison. Moyo is a Swahili word for heart and spirit. And it's just so spot on because so much of what has been happening has been about opening your heart. He's been telling me how how this whole practice of opening his heart has been so transformative. I have opened my heart in so many ways, brought light to, you know, previously dark nooks of my own heart. And for the 12 days that we had the exhibition open in Helsinki, and I had the blessing and the honor to be there to hold that space. And it really struck me how the people who stepped into that space, the over 300 people who stepped in, there was really that quality of an open heart. But going back to the choice of anonymity, actually, or using the artist name, these are Moyo's words and thoughts from a letter he sent to me. Just a second, my eyes are glancing through. Mm-hmm. No problem. I was thinking that it would be a great antidote for grasping the spotlight to have a healthy dose of anonymity. Smiley face. Have you ever heard that formula before of prescribing the opposite of some affliction in order to heal it? And then he quotes, "In the pursuit of learning, every day something is acquired. In the pursuit of the Tao, every day something is dropped. Less and less is done until non-action is achieved. When nothing is done, nothing is left undone. The world is ruled by letting things take their course. It cannot be ruled by interfering." Tao Te Ching.
That's beautiful, and I think what you left out was also, I think for me, one of the most powerful parts of that was that it actually bothered him initially, the decision to go anonymous had, but I think, can you speak a little bit about that? And because I think it's so, when we try and go in with a helping mindset, I think we'll often tend to assume we know what is needed, and we lead with that, with our version of reality that sometimes doesn't necessarily match up. And I think there was a lot of grace in the way he came to that decision of anonymity with his own way.
Yes.
When it hadn't originally sat so well with him.
Yes. Yes. Thanks, Bobby, for bringing that up. So what I just read was actually the conclusion that Moyo then arrived at, but when we were considering, when I suggested to him that, you know, let's use Moyo as your identity in this exhibition, there were many layers to this, and I don't want to share all of them, but I will just say that because when you rely on, you know, sending letters and time is tight, so I learned a lot about clarity of communication on this journey.
Yeah.
And this was actually one of the most important, beautiful parts of this journey of our friendship, you know, me and Moyo's friendship. So he actually then wrote back to me and he said that, you know, he's feeling like he's being put from one prison to another. He first wasn't really okay with the idea of anonymity, or I don't want to say anonymity because this is not anonymous, but, you know, the presence of Moyo has been so powerful everywhere. It's not anonymity, but, you know, the choice of using his artist name. So he brought up how that actually feels like going from one prison to another, that it's restrictive. And he shared very beautifully, very openly his thoughts. He started that letter with the word respect, and he told me that in here, in prison, whenever we want to express something kind of controversial is not the word, but if there's like some friction, so we start with the word respect to create that respectful space. Mm-hmm. So he started with the word respect, and then he expressed his feelings and how he sees that. And it totally struck me. I totally understood everything. And I felt shame. I felt deep shame within myself at that point. But then the next day, the very next day, comes this letter where he says that, you know, I see all of this now clear-eyed with you. I should have remembered that you are a person who wants, you know, nothing but good for me, and you are a person whom I want nothing but good as well. And, you know, just in that letter, all those kind of, I'm not very good at putting this into words right now. I should retreat back to silence. But let's just say that, yeah, then he himself concluded and he realized that he wants to move forward with the artist name as part of his spiritual practice, an antidote to what ego.
What I loved about this is that, you know, there is such a truly a respect in the way you both conduct this friendship as well as this collaboration. And, you know, you can, when you look at the playing fields that you're both in, you know, being in the free world just automatically invests you with so much more power to effect certain, to pull certain levers, to make certain things happen, to, you know, and you can start to leverage that in almost unconscious ways to make things happen your way or how you think is the right way, Maria. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, your ability to slow down, to really tune into each letter as it came, to not think about, oh, you know, Moira's not in charge of this part, like I'm responsible for this, so let me just make the decision. Like, to really give that space, I think it's just a very different way of working in the world. And to have that kind of trust where even when you don't agree with each other necessarily, to say, I know your intention and my intention are ultimately the same. So let's just walk this, you know, this difference until it's like the threads converge again. And that's how you've designed the exhibition, this platform, this whatever this river that is unfolding is. And before, you know, we want to transition into allowing listeners to call in with questions, but I wanted to bring up one very important element of this story, and that is that, you know, this is not just an art exhibition where the story of one, in one sense it is, but the story of the particulars matter, but there's also in Moyo's intention here, you know, he's someone who's used the solitary cell, and he says this on the site, he's used the cell as a meditation cell, but he's never mistaken one for the other. You know, he's very clear that there are realities, parts, you know, of his reality, the reality of being on death row, the reality of solitary confinement, that he has a strong stand on, and that this project and practice is bringing awareness to, and that it you know, there's a broader movement and directing of consciousness that you're, you know, participating in with this. Can you speak a little bit about that? This is not just a standalone project, right? What do you want this work and this collaboration, beyond Moyo's story and his art and the beauty of this relationship and the potential that it holds, what do you want, what is Buddhas on Death Row wanting to bring attention to when it comes to some of these, you know, these not so inspiring parts of the reality?
Yeah. Moya wrote to me recently, like after the exhibition closed in Helsinki, he wrote and he said that honestly, he actually just thought that, part of him thought that, okay, this is just one exhibition and then that'll be it. But this expansion that it has been, all the ripples that, you know, have come out of it have, and because his initial intention, the one that moved me in that letter that came last year was to use his life force for something, the good of, you know, more than himself. And I think that is the beating heart of Buddhas on death row, to really keep those ripples going and to serve. And Moyo has also been sharing with me how, for him, you know, this has been one of the first times that he's kind of been able to connect to the spirit of service. And same thing for me. I felt this sense of being so much more alive, for example, in all those interactions in the gallery space with people, seeing how this touches and how, you know, the ripples just go out. So I think in many ways, this is an open slate. Moyo wrote to me saying that he's just willing to walk the path onwards wherever it may lead. It's a mystery. It's an open horizon. But really, the key intention there is to, you know, build connection, affirm life. It's healing. It's taking responsibility. And it's about just, you know, sitting, as Fleet Moll said in his powerful awakening call last month, you know, it's about just sitting in that fire of transformation. And it's about leading with love, you know. It's about becoming more human, creating those spaces in which we can meet one another as human beings and where we can connect more deeply with our humanity, because we are all related. We cannot forget that we are all relatives.
One of the things that's been remarkable, there's many things that have been remarkable, but really, I think just recognizing with the ripples that you shared, and I'd like you to speak a little bit about the ripples, both from the exhibition as well as the process of this collaboration. But it just became so evident that prison walls that steel and concrete, there's only so much that it can keep out and only so much that it can keep in. The way Moyo's spirit, his stories, his art, his words have traveled in this month, the ways in which they have worked on the hearts and minds of people across the world is such a testament, I think, to that invisible force. And, you know, what is larger than our smallness? What is bigger than our crimes? What is, you know, it's been undeniable. When you hear and see kind of how people are responding to this. So if you could share a little bit about that, and also to share a little bit about the ripples and also about the effect. Has any of that traveled back to Moyo? Has the circle, you know, has it come back to him in any way?
Mm-hmm. So as the exhibition opened, there was this beautiful piece on dailygood.org about Buddhas on death row with three powerful passages from Moyo. And so many reflections came back from people sharing how those passages touched them. You know, that piece has been read by thousands of times. Has been read thousands of times by people everywhere around the world. I just want to read a few responses that came back. One person said, "I find it very hard to express my response to your words and your paintings. Both move me to tears of sadness and yet also of hope and great joy. Clearly, you have suffered enormously, and it's inspiring that you have not only owned your grave mistakes, but you have been drawn to use your art and gift with language to inspire others to be the best they can be. not only for their own sake, but for the sake of those around them. And another person who is also an art teacher says that sometimes I get lost and wonder what art is for. And Moyo reminded this person that art is about speaking from your soul, that art is a form of communication, that true communication is speaking from your soul, and life is about creating your own narrative. I know that we are short on time, and I would love to hear from the people who are on the line, but in terms of how, you know, all these ripples going back to Moyo and how he has felt, I just want to end here by reading a letter from him from last month. All this love and belief in me from all these lovely people who love so naturally and purely is having me ask, what is the real me? Is it my closed-hearted moment, or am I truly an endless river of free-flowing love? I look in the mirror after hearing the thoughts of these lovely people, trying to see what they see, and I see it. I will do my best to pass this gift of awakening on to others. It's key to keep on passing it down the line and around this awakening.
Key to pass it around and around.
So really how we can hold the mirror, you know, how to remember to look in the mirror to remind ourselves, but also to, you know, hold the mirror to others, and so that we all remember who we really are, and we can reconnect. And I think that's a beautiful way now to open the mirror of the teleconference to forward.
Yes, so that's wonderful. Albert writes in and says, thank you. A beautiful celebration of our indisputable connection with each other, dissolving the fear of the intimacy of vulnerability of the human condition. Thank you, Albert, from up in the Sierras, sent from his cell phone.
Thank you. Thank you, Albert.
There's so much to sort of still continue to dive into, and, you know, thinking, just kind of touching upon something that Bhavya had actually said earlier, you know, when you think about where Moyo is, you know, in this cell and considering where you are, just from a physical space, and then you take that down to the mental level. I'm curious what the impact has been on you personally when you take those constructs into account, right? So when you think about the fact that, yeah, while he might physically be in a jail or a prison cell, we too sometimes mentally are put ourselves in a cell. We put up borders, we put up walls around us. And so I'm curious how some of his insights have impacted you in that sense.
It's impacted me a lot. I think I'm a better version of myself in so many ways. And that's what happens, you know, when we connect with each other. Of course, I'm just stating the obvious, but it just manifests in daily life for me. The point is to bring it to the daily life. That's where the real practice is. So I would just say, for example, what I also said in the Awakening Call introduction, that one morning when I was biking to work, the realization just came to me that, you know, today as I'm biking here, I can be a friendly face, an assuring face, you know, that someone else will see. And who can I be that friendly face to? You know, of course, to everyone, but to be mindful of the quality that you bring to all those interactions. And that quality of what you bring to interactions is something that Moyo and I have also been writing about a lot. So it's really coming from those letters to the everyday lived life.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's interesting, you know, what I find about you have this openness to you. And I feel like it's because of this true openness that it's allowed you to come across, you know, so many different or unlock what they call the blooming possibilities around you, you know, in regard to a painter of the desert or a yoga program for South African inmates. And obviously this beautiful friendship with Moyo. And I'm curious, you know, if you were to look at the heart of that, you know, what is it that has opened up your heart so much? And what is it that's been so critical to your inner cultivation?
Oh, that's a big question. retreating to silence for sure, and just nourishing yourself, and you know the way Moyo writes that, you know, all of this has brought him to ask, you know, what is the real me? So I've really been brought back to that question as well, and I've seen the smallness of my heart. I've seen, you know, what comes when you act from a smaller heart, you know, when if you are fearful, if, you know, it's just kind of sharpened my vision to be more aware and to recognize those things, and when they come up, to acknowledge them, but then with compassion, you know, to move forward and just keep on, you know, striving. I don't know if I'm being clear at all here, but just one thought that has been in my mind for the past few days is like I've really noticed some of my own insecurities and like negative thought patterns, and I'm like, okay, that's a negative thought pattern. Now, you know, that's okay. I'll keep moving forward. I don't know if that made any sense.
No, absolutely it does. I mean, so often or so important, I often feel, is at least having that initial recognition before you can even get to any other stage, right? You have to have that recognition and then let it allow it flow into reflection, and then you have to make that decision what you want to do, if anything at all.
Yes.
And so, very nice. And, you know, the other thing that I'm, you know, that sort of, you know, stood out, and I think Bobby touched on it a bit earlier as well, is, you know, when you think about, you know, not just Moyo, but many of the other people around the world that are in prison cells and they're on death row, but, you know, have come in at such an early age, you know,
yes.
And that thought that, you know, well, you know, at such an early age, you would think that maybe we should have tried to rehabilitate him rather than just saying that the rest of this individual's life we're just sentencing to death. And so I'm curious, you know, what this has done, whether it's Buddha's on death row or even in your own life, towards creating awareness and education around that or restorative justice.
Thank you, Amit, for that question. That's such an important one. And that is something, like, for example, the concept of restorative justice. I did not know anything about it. I first heard, you know, some small things about it. Like a year ago, I started to be aware. Mm-hmm. And now this process and practice of Buddhas on death row, one of the things I feel strongly is responsibility to educate yourself, to, you know, responsibility to seek better ways of thinking and being, as Moyo says. And for me, that has come in the way of learning, educating myself more, exploring, for example, the concept of restorative justice. Well, I'm not in a place to really speak about it. I'm only learning right now, but okay, I seem to have lost my ability to continue this sentence right now. Yesterday, I had a chance here in California to visit the San Quentin prison. I was there for half a day with Jacques Verduin, who for 20 years has been doing transformative work with violent offenders. and this opportunity to join him and to join the inmates in the prison in these transformative circles was something that has come as an opportunity that opened because of Buddha Sondesho. And to sit in a circle with prisoners with closed eyes, meditating, and bowing into the circle and then sharing from your heart. They had so many questions about Buddha Sondesho, about this journey, about fear, about building trust, about one of them asked me, you know, how long have you been in your heart center and working from there, working and acting from your heart center? And I said, well, it's on and off. Most of the time it's off, but, you know, just becoming more aware that how and reminding yourself of coming back to that center. So I would like to end this response by just sharing with everyone one thing that the inmates shared with me. They told me that, you know, you don't know who we are. You don't know what we have done. But we thank you for allowing us to support you on this journey. Mm. And their questions, the questions they asked me, were just so critical in illuminating to me, you know, in making sense of the potential of Buddha Sondesho and everything that we've been building together with Moyo.
Absolutely. And for those of you callers that are on the line or listening in, Jacques Verdun, who's also been a previous guest on this call, he's a founder of a program called GRIP, which is Guiding Rage into Power. And he's sort of helped birth the Prison Mindfulness Initiative and Prison Yoga Project, and works with a lot of inmates in the highest level prisons to pioneer ways at cultivating their inner selves and transforming themselves. And so what a wonderful opportunity that you had to be able to spend time with him and some of the prisoners there at San Quentin.
Truly.
I bet you can't wait to write that to Moyo.
Exactly. Yeah, I actually have a card ready here that I want to write after this call.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, you know, one of the questions we always like to do sort of to wrap up our call is, what is it that we can do to be of service to you or to Moyo? And I feel like he has been our guest on this call as well. And so, you know, as a community, what is it that we can do to be supportive to both of your journeys?
Thank you for that. To welcome a request. I feel that, you know, sharing your reflections, sharing how Buddha Sondesho is touching you, it would be so valuable to hear back from you in terms of, you know, making just away whatever might emerge in the future. So I would just love to hear from whoever feels called and feels touched to share. So you can send an email. You can find the contact information from the website buddhasondesho.com. So that's one major thing in which we can, you know, join hands.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone can also consider, for example, to write a prisoner, to, you know, and just ways of how we can build bridges.
Absolutely. And we'll definitely share the website with all of the callers as well later on this week. And so we'll make sure to do that. And, you know, if you guys have notes or gratitude or any messages that you would perhaps even like conveyed to Moyo, we can pass that along to Maria, and she can find a creative way to get that to him as well. And
yes,
so,
thank you. That would be wonderful.
So, Maria, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. You know, we have another comment from one of our callers who said, you know, gratitude, Maria, for palpably bringing Moyo's presence into the circle. We thank you and Moyo for sharing your noble friendship and unconditional love that has no bounds and invites us into the vastness of your heart, where barriers do not exist and we are truly connected. Bless you both, Anve from Mill Valley.
Thank you, Anve from Mill Valley.
Before we go into the closing, I just wanted to quickly, because I know we're at the very end, someone did have a question, Shalini, saying, have you had a chance to meet Moyo in person? And if so, what was that like? Do you want to quickly answer that question, Maria? And then I know you had a closing poem from Moyo that you wanted to read. And then we will have Amit close out the call.
Thank you. Thank you, Shalini. I'm actually going to meet Moyo next week.
Wow.
For the first time. So may the journey continue. I want to just conclude with a poem that Moyo wrote for the exhibition opening. I bow to you from across the seas, land, green grasses, electrified fences, concrete walls, the unstoppable bow of peace, of love, the big bow, big as sky above, as serenely blue. Peace be with you, by your side, inside you, in this way. You are with me, and I am with you. Thank you humbly for joining us for our ceremony of peace, of justice, of art. My sincere wish is that you experience all the beauty, truth, high values, and courage you see in you, in these works who sincerely emanate from all the truth and beauty in me, which I've collected from all my experiences. Pain, my teachers. Love, my protectors. Friendship, my humanity, our humanity. May you find a usefulness in the details we all overlook. May you find here some small inspiration pointing toward our potential. May we all find peace.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what we'd like to do is we'd like to close off with a quick moment of silence, this time in gratitude for both Maria and Moyo. And so if we can, on the count of three, I'm going to take everyone off mute here. We could say a big collective thank you to both Maria and Moyo. That'd be wonderful. Two and three. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Moyo.
Thank you,
Miles.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and we hope you can join us next week. And again, Maria, Bobby, thank you so much for today.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.